Evening all. Welcome to this Kingborough Council meeting on Monday the 9th of December at 5:30pm, and my name's Dean Winter and I officially open this council meeting. The first thing to do is to let you know that the audio recording of council meetings is recorded and it's made available on our website, and in line with that policy I now ask the General Manager to confirm that the audio recording has commenced.
Confirmed.
That's been confirmed. The acknowledgement of traditional custodians. I begin tonight by paying our council's respect to the traditional and original owners of this land, the Muwinina people. I acknowledge the contemporary Tasmanian Aboriginal community who have survived invasion and dispossession and continue to maintain and fight for their identity, their culture and Indigenous rights. Attendees this evening have myself, Councillor Winter, Councillor Westwood, Councillor Cordover, Councillor Fox, Councillor Grace, Councillor Street, Councillor Wass, Councillor Reet. We are expecting Councillor Midgley. She may be running, I'm sure she's working, so maybe running a couple of minutes late. From our staff this evening, we have our General Manager, Gary Arnold, our Deputy General Manager, Tony Ferrier, our Executive Manager, Engineering Services, David Reeve, our Executive Manager of Governance and Community Services, Daniel Smee, our Manager of Environmental Services, John Dool, our Manager of Development Services, Tasha Tyler Moore, our Communications and Engagement Advisor, Sarah Wilcox, our Executive Assistant, Amanda Morton, and Project Manager, Steve Loxley. And we now welcome Councillor Midgley, who has arrived. Apologies this evening. We have an apology on leave of absence from Councillor Sue Bastone. Confirmation of minutes on page 2. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder of the minutes as printed. Councillor Fox has moved and Councillor Westwood has seconded. And the motion is that the minutes of the open session of council meeting number 23, held on the 25th of November 2019, be confirmed as a true record. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against, motion is carried unanimously. The next item is the workshops held since the last council meeting. And on the 2nd of December, we held a workshop into our planning review. Also on page 2 is the declarations of interest. Does any councillor have an interest to declare in tonight's meeting? Councillor Grace.
Roslyn Avenue and the signage on Bruni.
So you won't be leaving the room? Okay. Mr. Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll be declaring a conflict of interest on the last item in the closed session, which is the General Manager's performance review.
Thank you, General Manager. We have no other declarations of interest at this time. So the next item is the transfer of agenda items. Does any councillor wish to ask to transfer an agenda item? Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. Considering the gallery is packed tonight, and I think they're here for the Roslyn Avenue decision mostly, I'd like to ask that that be moved to the first item of the officer's report, please.
So the motion Councillor Fox is moving is that we move the North Roslyn Avenue report to the first item in officer's reports. Do I have a seconder for that? Yeah. Councillor Grace. All those in favour of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. So just for the benefit of the gallery, we've just brought that particular item up, so it'll be first. If you've got the agenda, it'll be the first of all those officers' reports. Any other transfers of agenda item? Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I would like to ask whether I could move two items from closed session into open session tonight. The first item is 19.3, access to public open space at Riverdale Road, and the second item is 19.4, blowhole reserve risk mitigations.
So can we get some advice on that, Mr. Smee, perhaps? One at a time, perhaps, yeah.
Through you, Mayor, Council's at liberty to move whatever agenda items it wishes. I could provide the detail as to why the officer recommendation that it be considered in closed council, if that would be beneficial.
Yes.
Okay, so in relation to the blowhole reserve, there is a potential, given the history of the site, for litigation against council associated with the subject matter of the report. therefore, in accordance with section 15.2i of the meeting procedures, that's why that's been listed enclosed. Two other reasons why that's been listed enclosed. The report deals with costings for the supply of goods and services, and if those costings were to be made public, it would then compromise council's position in terms of obtaining a fair market value for the supply of those services. So under section 15.2b of the meeting procedures, it's appropriate that be considered in closed session. And finally, the report does touch on matters involving council's interest in privately owned land, and in accordance with section 15.2f of the meeting regulations, that is why that has been listed for discussion enclosed. So there's three reasons in relation to the Blowhole Reserve. In relation to the Riverdale Road report, that proposal is related directly to Council's interest in acquisition of privately owned land, for which the recommendation is that the General Manager be authorised to negotiate an agreement. Now, if Council were to disclose its hand by discussing that in open session, the ability of the General Manager to negotiate that agreement is compromised if the discussion is held in open, and therefore it's recommended it be held in closed session.
Councillor Westwood.
Well, just a couple of questions then in relation to the Blowhole Reserve risk mitigations item. Council didn't own the land at the time of the unfortunate, very tragic incident that happened almost 3 years ago now. So would that reduce the litigation, the risk of litigation? And then in terms of the supply of services, I thought that we had awarded a tender to someone to already do something mentioned in that report, so therefore wouldn't that already have been accounted for?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. The question of the tenure of the land, I guess, is part of the whole question of council's liability. Now, whilst we didn't own the land, we were quite clearly maintaining the land and therefore have an interest in the land and potentially party to any claim associated with it. In relation to the supply of goods and services, we have let a tender for the work in Tolone Road. This report deals with a proposal for expenditure of additional funding that is to do with the additional fencing proposed in the report.
Councillor Westwood, you don't wish to proceed with the transfer of agenda items?
I'm not sure based on that advice that I can.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smee.
The next item is questions without notice from the public. Would any member of the public like to ask a question without notice? The only thing you'll note is that it can't be on something that's on the agenda. Mr. McDonald.
I'm here as proxy for Mr. Maynard, who's off having minor surgery.
Just for the record, too.
Yes, John McDonald, 95 Cage Drive.
Thank you.
Kingston. There's been a short series of questions over the past few meetings on compliance with statutory timeframes for planning and building matters. The first question was asked on the 28th of October at page 3 of the agenda. Follow-up question from Mr. Maynard was asked on the 25th of November at page 3 of that agenda. And there's an answer to further questions at page 5 of this evening's agenda. The questions that I've been asked to put, and I'm quite happy to just read them out and just leave them to be answered in due course rather than on the spot, if that's appropriate. First question is, can Council explain the apparent discrepancy between the officer's responses to the questions on the 25th of November and the 9th of December? The second question is, as the assessment times for three DAs and the table of five appear to have exceeded statutory limits, are the permits invalid? The third question is, in these cases, is any development based on these permits illegal? And the final question, in these same cases, that's those three specific DAs, has section 59 of LUCA been fully complied with? As I said, I'm happy to just simply leave a copy of those questions for...
We'll take them on notice.
Of course.
Thank you, Donald. Any other member of the public like to ask a question without notice this evening? That being the case, we'll move on. Did I miss one? Sorry, yeah, you work. Oh, you work. Yeah, sorry. It's a few people here tonight.
Wayne Burgess, 88 Wells Parade, Blackmans Bay. Going back, I think, to Kingborough Planning Scheme 2000, a major review of that document was carried out, to which members of the community contributed, to make the 2007 version. Not too far down the track from that, we then got involved in the start of the so-called statewide planning scheme. My question simply is this: that exercise probably started within the council about 2014 or maybe a little earlier. Have council been keeping a detailed record of the amount of, I was going to say man hours, I shouldn't say that, person hours, or maybe it amounts to person years, basically, in the work involved in the initial phase of the so-called state planning provisions preparation and all of the work that went into that? And tonight we have, of course, the second major component of the statewide planning scheme, our local provision schedules. So I'm interested to know whether council has kept specific records as to just how much money and time it has cost this council in order to get at least to this stage, bearing in mind, of course, we've still got a way to go.
Mr. Ferrier.
Through the chair, the short answer is no, we don't. There has, over the years, been anecdotal comments from local government as to how much a new planning scheme costs a council over the time, but we haven't made any estimates in relation to the work that we've been doing ourselves in recent years.
Any further questions without notice? In that case, we move to questions on notice from the public. Number one is on the Suncoast walking track from John Maynard. Number two is on North Roslyn Avenue petition report from Tricia Ramsey. Number three is Kingston Park implementation report October 2019 from Ray Westwood. Number four is land disposal from Ray Westwood. Number five is employees code of conduct from Tricia Ramsey. Number six is planning and development from Tricia Ramsey. We now move to questions without notice from councillors. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. Taswater is introducing Stage 1 water restrictions in the Greater Hobart region from the 20th of December 2019, expected to be in place until the end of February 2020. These restrictions aim to reduce non-essential water use by 20% by encouraging more conscious use of water at home and at work. Now, conjecture in the media has been around the profligate use of water by tourists. Water infrastructure in this state is designed to cater for about 500,000 people, not the 1.3 million tourists who visit each year. Constituents are wondering why they have to pay for their water and undergo restrictions when tourists face no such consequence. Has council investigated implementing a tourist tax on short-term accommodation operators to ameliorate some of this community cost?
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Cordova. Not to my knowledge is the answer to your question.
Very good. A second question, through you, Mayor. This past weekend, I was enthused to see at the AGM that a motion to invest more resource in climate action was voted in by an overwhelming majority of the public in attendance. Recently, I was contacted by an inspirational young member of our community, Emily Hudspeth, senior leader, co-president at Kingston High School, and I'm pleased to see Emily in the public gallery today. Emily would like to see council take more local action on climate change, specifically implementing a phase out of single-use plastic. In September 2018, the Australian Packaging Covenant Organisation, the APCO board, approved four national packaging targets. These targets are that by 2025, 100% of packaging will be reusable, recyclable or compostable, 70% of plastic packaging will be recycled or composted, 30% average recycled content will be included across all packaging, and most importantly, problematic or unnecessary single-use plastic packaging will be phased out through redesign, innovation or alternative delivery methods. So these are the national targets by 2025. So my question is, to date, What investigation and consultation has the Council conducted towards implementing a phase-out of single-use plastics in Kingborough? What initiatives should we be organising now to help minimise the impact on our local business community of the transition to phase out all single-use plastic as soon as possible?
Mr. Dool, I throw that to you. You can take it on notice, of course.
Mayor, I think I'll do just that, thanks.
I got on notice. Stumped us again. Councillor Grace.
Yeah, Mayor, I've just got two quick ones. I had a phone call late to go in this afternoon regarding the burnt out shop at Electrona. Some months now it's been burnt out. The neighbours are concerned about it, as when the wind gets up it's blowing into their place, and how much asbestos is in that property one does not know. So is there anything council can do to speed up the demolishing of the shop? That's one.
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, we can get our building department staff to go out and have a look at the site, and if necessary we can do an emergency order to have the building demolished.
Thank you. My second question is, and I think you're aware of this too, the Ketron Association down there is looking at putting up a shelter over the barbecue area. And my question is when it comes to council, I understand it's coming to council on the 13th of December, a report. Will there be a report to transfer funds from the public open space to allow this project to go forward before the summer months?
So the report you're referring to is, I think the General Manager is calling it a mini budget, which we'll be looking to review how we're going financially for this current financial year. The gentleman I think you've spoken to today is the same gentleman I've spoken to. What I've said is that in order for us to undertake that project, and I think from memory it's a matter of a few thousand dollars, we would actually, $8,000, we would need to make a decision within that, either that mini budget or a future budget deliberation. So that's a project that looks good to me on paper. There's a quote, but we need to figure out where it actually sits. So the 13th of January would be the first opportunity for us to review our budget. That's a potential time you could do it, or I think annually we usually hear from Mr. Reeve when he does a review of how his capital budget's going, or alternatively during our workshop for next year's budget we could include it in that. So it's a matter of finding the money to do the project.
Second part of the question is then, obviously would this need a DA? If so, how can the DA be processed once council deals with it?
I think that's a good point, and I'm happy to progress that on behalf of the resident you mentioned. Any other questions without notice from councillors? Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. Following on from some questioning by Councillor Wass recently, I'm just wondering in relation to the community hub, a few things. Firstly, how do members of our community book the community hub to use that venue? Secondly, how is the community hub being advertised as a venue that's available for booking? And thirdly, what is council doing to maximise bookings of this venue?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, in relation to the bookings, that's done through our community hub coordinator. We are working on a marketing plan that is going to improve the way in which the potential hirers of the place can find out about the venue, and including consideration of online booking. And what was the third question?
It was about how's council maximising the bookings.
As I said, that would be linked to the marketing plan that we are developing in assistance with our media and communications advisor.
And just one follow-on question from that. When do you think that marketing plan will be implemented?
Through you, Mayor, we are working on that right now, and we'd hope to be implementing that very soon in the new year.
Councillor Wass.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I have two questions. The first one relates to the Hobart Huskies, because as at the 21st of November this year, there was an amount of $3,370 outstanding. I'd like to know whether that amount is still outstanding, and if it is, what arrangements are in place for the repayment of that amount?
Do you want to take that on notice, Mr. Smee or Mr. Smee?
Mayor, I haven't had an update from our finance department as to the status of that, but we certainly can check.
Thank you. Well, my final question, and please forgive me, it is Christmas, so I've been put up to this question, and as it's Christmas, I will ask it. Mayor, I would like to congratulate you on the saving of the whale at Kingston Beach, but my question is, why didn't you tell Clarence what to do? Because they let the poor whale pass away.
Thanks. I'll take that as a comment. Thanks, Councillor Watts. Very good. Okay, back with it. We also had some questions on notice from councillors, and they were the community hub from Councillor Wass. Question two is on the environmental offset fund from Councillor Cordova, and question three was on water supply stickers, also from Councillor Cordova. And with that, open session adjourns, and the planning authority will commence at 5:51 p.m. And the first item is on page 11, and it's officers' reports to the planning authority. Delegated authority for period 13 November 2019 to 26 November 2019. There's a recommended motion on page 13. Looking for someone to move and second that. Councillor Street moves and Councillor Fox seconds. Any comments or questions in relation to this item? Okay, there are no lights on, in which case the motion is moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Fox. Is that the report be noted? All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion is carried. The next item is DA 2019-546, development application for two wall signs attached to existing fences at 82 Wisby's Road, North Bruny, for Free Spirit Pods. Recommendations on page 24. Someone
I'll
like
move.
Move. You'll move the recommended motion?
No, I've got an alternative. Oh.
Right, I just want to firstly see if anyone wants to move the recommended motion.
Yeah.
That's the first thing.
Yeah, sorry,
Mayor. That's all right. If no one's sure.
If this is a planning, is this a planning section? Why aren't we moving into a planning authority?
We did. We adjourned.
I beg your pardon. Sorry.
Yep, it's all right. If no one wants to move the recommended motion, I'm happy to hear Councillor Grace's motion.
Mayor, I'm happy to move. An alternative motion which we would leave, because this is just dealing with two signs.
Yeah, hang on, no, just move the motion first and then you can do your...
The motion is that we that the permit resolve the resolution development application for two signs subject to the conditions. Well, one and two conditions I would like to leave in, but 3, 4, 5... 6 and 7 out, because I don't think it has any relevant to do with
Hang
the up, signage.
Just before you start debating it, let's just so you want to, so it's the motion as printed, but with only condition one, and you want to remove four, and five,
no,
or just you want to like just delete 2 and 3? Is that correct? 3, 4, and 5.
And so, point of clarification, Mayor. Yeah. So since nobody's moved the original motion, if this then passes, if this doesn't pass, does it revert back to what happened?
Well, you could foreshadow the original motion.
I foreshadow.
Yeah, good.
Good call.
I'll get to that. I'll let you make sure you do that. Yeah. Okay, so Councillor Grace, I just want to confirm for the record, so everyone's clear, that you're moving the motion as printed within the agenda with only condition one and the rest two.
One and two.
I think.
Yeah, because...
I think two. But two you want deleted?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you want deleted.
Because the, okay. The external lights...
Hang on. Before you debate. Okay, so the motion, so everyone understands, is as printed with conditions 2, 3, 4 and 5 deleted. Would anyone like to second the motion?
No, sorry, can I just... I've just gone back to my notes. It's 1, 2 and 3 stays. Delete. Anyway.
I'm going to help you out, Councillor Grace, because you did speak to me about this before the meeting, so I'm going to help you out. Councillor Grace, before the meeting you discussed with me, you were thinking you were considering just deleting conditions 2 and 3?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay,
that's
so the motion Councillor Grace is moving is as printed with conditions 1, 4 and 5, mm-hmm. 2 and 3 not included. Would anyone like to second that motion? Councillor Street seconds. Councillor Grace, make your off away you go.
Well, I'm happy with the report from here on in because I was concerned about conditions that have nothing to do with this council, particularly with the Crown land, which the council doesn't own, and it says that no pedestrian access to the coastal reserve, and also direct pedestrian access from the development site to the coastal reserve must not occur without a written consent of the manager of development services. Well, we don't own this land. It belongs to National Parks, so I can't see how we can justify that. Everyone else can walk on that piece of land except the occupant of the development there. And as far as the visitors, you wish to consider contacting council rate department to change the street address in order to avoid GPP system. That's, you know, they're things that's got nothing to do with signage, in my opinion. I mean, this application came before the council earlier this year with so many conditions, and I've never seen so many conditions put on such a development application in my life on this council. And to be quite frank, I don't know why the developer chose to go ahead with it. I'd have walked away if it had been myself, but he chose to.
Do you need to try and be relevant to the DA that's
yes,
in front of us?
Yes, I will. Thank
Councillor
you.
Grace, yeah. Okay. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I do thank Councillor Grace for raising the issue of a couple of these conditions. I did have some concerns in relation to Condition 2, the requirement of a survey plan. I'm not sure of the exact cost of obtaining a survey plan, but in light of the DA we're dealing with, which is about putting up some signage, I think it is not reasonable to ask someone to get a survey plan done and done within 3 months to ascertain the boundary of the existing fence when we're dealing not with a boundary issue but with an issue of signage. So thank you for raising that, Councillor Grace. In relation to Condition 3, I had a couple of questions for staff about that in regards to exterior lighting and the requirements that we would normally place on signage in similar types of areas.
Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor. My understanding of the question is, do we restrict lighting for signage?
Is this a condition that we would normally put on an applicant who's wanting to erect a couple of signs on a fence in an area that's not a highly populated area?
Through you, Mayor, yes, it is. Lighting is something that we control in areas of natural environment because of the impacts on neighbouring properties. There have been concerns by the residents about the lighting in the area. There was restrictions about lighting for the development itself. It's so as to not detract from the natural environment that people go to Bruny Island to enjoy, and is unnecessary to have it flooding in an area. It should really just flood what it needs to, which is the sign. So by baffling and making sure that it's on the sign, it won't be to the detriment of the operators at all.
And so are there neighbours that abut that front boundary fence?
Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor, there's neighbours within the area that abut the fence and use the same road.
So those neighbours are across the road from the fence?
Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor, the neighbours, well, it is a boundary fence, so yes, there's always neighbours that abut the boundaries of the site. But it's also from a greater distance. So it's not something that we want to see throughout the area with flooding of lighting of areas to try and keep that ambience of the area by not flooding it. And again, it won't be to the detriment of the signs, it's just for the purpose of lighting the sign.
Thank you.
Councillor Meachley.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd also just like to raise a point in regards to the exterior lighting. I note that it has come on other matters for Bruny Island, not in regards necessarily to fencing, and officers have stated is in regards to the ambience and natural environment that Bruny Island is. And I know, living in a semi-rural area, I'm actually very sensitive to lighting, and we do go to a rural area. It is something about just being away from all of that sort of, you know, lighting and things like that. So I'm actually really happy with that recommendation, and I think it is important that we do keep these within these areas, and just for times to come as well, as we have more and more developments and holiday accommodation in these areas. I think it's important that the reasons what Bruny Island is, the natural environment, so I think it's an important recommendation.
Councillor Fox.
Yes, I echo Councillor Midgley's concerns. I know that we've got, for example, Southern Lights at the end of Wingara Road where I live, and it's a very popular spot, and if I walk down there at night, I sometimes bump into cars that are parked there photographing the Southern Lights. And if people want a light, they can carry a head torch or take a torch along. So I don't see why there should be floodlighting in a public location by the foreshore, where it will be affecting birds and penguins and other natural animals and wildlife in the area. So I think it's a very appropriate clause to be putting in. And item two, I think a survey plan from memory costs around $1,000, and it's the way of actually making sure that your boundary is where you say it is, and most developments require a survey. It's not an onerous thing to be asking, particularly when it's against Crown land and where fences may well be fences of convenience rather than actually on the boundary. So I think it's an important clause in this recommendation. Thank you.
Councillor, you're right, you don't have to speak.
Yeah, okay, well, yes, very quickly, I think so far we're discussing clause three. We've just heard from staff that there's concerns about lighting, so it's not to detract from the natural environment, but I think a broader point here is that what we're trying to balance is, bearing in mind our mission statement is to put the community at the heart of everything we do, and not necessarily to put an individual's desires at the heart of everything we do. So I just want everybody to be aware of the balance that we're trying to strike here, is that everybody can get on in the community without being unnecessarily interfered with by the desires of some people to, you know, to put up floodlighting. The question that I have through you, Mayor, for whoever would like to answer it, is because I recall that we did baffling at, for example, the marina in Kettering. I just wanted to know how often do we put provisions, clauses, conditions on development to have baffling of lights, and is it a controversial thing in general to request?
Ms. Tollamore.
Through you, Mayor, the planning scheme specifically refers to light baffling of light in a number of zones. It can be from commercial zones to residential zones, it could be environmental zones, it could be near wildlife corridors and so forth. So it's definitely in the planning scheme. It's there to protect amenity as well as natural environment and ambience. And many of our applications that have external lighting may have a requirement to baffle that lighting just to contain it within their own site. If it could be appreciated, we also have to deal with all the complaints of residents about their neighbours and the lighting and the lighting impacts that they have.
Councillor Reid.
Thank you. I have trouble with this amended motion because I agree with part of it and not with the other part. So I agree that number two, part the recommendation two should be taken out, but I think that the lighting one and the requirement for it to be baffled does need to stay. So I'm really confused now as to how I'm going to vote, because I only want to vote for half of the amendment.
Could you Could you suggest to the mover and seconder that number three be put back in?
I'd like to do that. I'm not sure if the mover would consider putting number three back. I think one short explanation on that is that I think that that's the happy medium, and that's sort of what Councillor Cordova was saying. We're trying to put the community at the heart of everything we do. We've got to balance up the residents who potentially could be impacted by this with the desire of the applicant to actually have their sign lit. And I think the baffling is the happy medium, so I would really like point three to stay. I don't know whether the mover would be amenable to that.
Yes, I would, but I would like to also point out at the moment that they're not floodlights.
No.
Yeah.
And there is no one.
Now, Councillor Grace, you do get another opportunity to speak at the end.
Yeah, okay. Well,
you're happy for.
Yeah.
And the seconder, Councillor Street?
He certainly is.
Okay. So, what we're now doing is we're just removing points two from the recommended motion. And Councillor Rees, if you want
to
continue.
No, I don't need to say anything more. I'm happy to support the amended motion now. Thank you.
Councillor Cordova.
I have a question. And my question is that Clause 2, as I understand it, so I'd like clarity on whether I'm right about this, Clause 2 says that a sign should be on private land rather than on Crown land. And my question is about what kind of a precedent it would set to allow business owners, or indeed anyone, to place advertising signage on Crown land. If the owner wants to have signage, then surely they should be prepared to prove that the land is indeed theirs. Would we be happy, for example, if businesses start putting their signs everywhere, and would we be happy if council candidates started putting their signs on Crown land?
So we're not, and this doesn't create a precedent. The application is for a sign to be placed on private land that we obviously, the Crown won't, it hasn't got anything to do with the Crown. The question is whether we want to put a requirement on the applicant to undertake a survey to prove whether that is too onerous or not, and that's a summary of the arguments I've heard. Is it too onerous to ask someone to pay a four-figure sum to prove that the fence is on the boundary?
Okay, so my next question then, Mayor, is about in situations similar to this, is it not a standard provision that the burden of proof is on the applicant to find the boundaries of their property?
Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor, it's a slightly unusual situation with this one. Typically, people's fences and boundaries are obvious. In rural properties, and we would classify this as a rural property, fences can have been erected in the wrong place for many, many years, and they can be out by a lot. In urban areas, it might be 300 mil out or something like that, but in urban areas, it's different. As the councils all had copies of the representations. You would have seen in the representation there was concerns raised by the residents about the correct location of that fence. It wasn't clear in the application because typically we wouldn't ask for a survey plan for an application of this nature up front. But it is understood that it's not clear exactly where the sign is. It doesn't line up well with the cadastre, but the cadastre can, which is the mapping that we use in council, isn't 100% accurate either. So to ensure that it is on private land and not Crown land, that's why the condition's been imposed. So if it is removed and the signs are in the wrong place, then you have the potential challenge from the neighbouring residents who have already raised it as an issue, that they're going to continue to challenge whether that is their boundary or not. This is just an easier way to clear it up.
Just one more question, with your indulgence, Mayor. So I'm trying to... This is now a financial question. It's about if we were to reverse the burden of proof in this case and council then were to cover the cost, being cognisant of the fact that in December of 2018 we had 675 planning permit applications, the month before that it was 600, the month before that 573, so bearing in mind that there's 600 potential times that we would have to pay if we set this precedent, do any staff have any commentary on whether or not this would be a financial massive risk for us to start paying for everybody's planning surveys 600 times a month just because this one person doesn't want to fork out $1,000?
What's that got
to do? It's a bit tenuous, but Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor, as I said, that this is an uncommon occurrence that we would have to question the survey boundary. So it wouldn't occur for 600 applications. Council wouldn't foot the bill for the survey. We don't offer that service. It would become a separate matter and possibly be dealt with through the residents and the Crown. This is just a simpler way of dealing with it. So I don't think that it's going to set a... I don't think a cost will be imposed on council, and I don't think it would set a precedence because it's fairly uncommon that this occurs.
Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, very happy with the motion as it's now been amended. I think Ms Tyler more probably belled the cat on this when she said that it would end up being a matter between the residents and Crown Land. While I understand the intent of Clause 2, I just don't think it's something that we need to get involved in where we're not the landowner. If there's an issue with the fencing and the location of that fencing, and Crown Lands see that there's any issue with the location of the fencing, then I think that's a matter for Crown Lands to take up with the resident and not a matter for us to expend time and effort getting involved in.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. As I understand, this is a retrospective application, and it was, I think it was 2018. How come... I mean, it does kind of, you know, on Bruny Island, I guess we have many recommendations for developments that happen to happen there. And it just so happens that a nearby resident actually picked up this mistake. How come this wasn't picked up in the first application?
Ms Tollamore.
Through you, Mayor. I'm a little confused about the question. Is it that it wasn't a mistake about the signs? The developer just put the signs up even though they'd been advised not to put signs up, and a resident brought it to our attention, and through our compliance we've addressed that by requiring them to apply for retrospective application, which is not a given that they'll get a permit, but it is a means by assessing it and to get the outcome that we want. Is that I'm not sure if that's answering the question.
Yes, sorry for not understanding that. Thank you for explaining.
Councillor Grace, would you like to sum up?
Mr Mayor, the less I say about this, the better, because I might get myself into an awful lot of trouble.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. All right. The motion is that the Planning Authority resolves that the retrospective development application for two wall signs attached to existing fences at 82 Wisby's Road, North Bruny, for Free Spirit Pods be approved, subject to the following conditions, but only conditions 1, 3, 4 and 5 as printed in the agenda. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against? Have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. It's Councillor Grace, Street, Reet, Westwood, Wass and Winter. And those against is Councillors Fox, Cordova and Midgley. The motion is carried. Okay, next item is the Planning Authority now adjourns, and the open session of Council will commence at 6:12 p.m. And I think this, I've got to go to Councillor Grace, has got a notice of motion on page 30. Councillor Grace, would you move the motion as printed in the paper?
Yes, I will.
Yep. And can you read it just for...
Just the motion?
Yeah, just the motion.
That a report be prepared into options and cost, both capital and ongoing, of reopening section of Halls Track Road to all vehicles.
Looking for a second of that motion. Councillor Reet. Councillor Grace.
Mr Mayor, as we know in the report, it says somewhere, oh, some stuff came to councils about this being closed in 2008. It says that we all voted against it. Well, that's not the case as I read it. I read that four was for it and four against it, as I read in the document that came to me. But nevertheless, that's irrelevant because that was 2008. The report that I'm asking for is based on the fact that somebody was seriously ill and they could not get an ambulance to that area. They had to call back to Hobart to get a four-wheel drive ambulance and finally get in there an hour and a half later, I believe. I don't know what the outcome of that result was, and all I'm asking for is for the staff to have a good look at this, bring back doesn't have to be a detail, just an idea of how many houses are up in there. I can't get up in there. I wouldn't take my car in there. And we know that these roads a council make decisions on. We've had to go back and do several of them over the last few years. And I'm not asking for any sealing of roads. I just want a simple report. Come back to council. Tell us how many houses are up there and what it would cost just to bring it into a drivable pathway if we have to. Thank you.
Councillor Fox.
I noticed from the report that the previous report would have cost us $100,000 at the time to bring this road up to standard. There is an alternative route which is only 1.9 kilometres longer than the existing route, and there is also a sealed Pelvirata road very close. I did drive this road exactly 12 years ago when my daughter was expecting a baby, and it was the worst thing I've ever done because it was so rough and so rocky and it was very, very bumpy, and I was glad to get out of there without her losing the baby, quite frankly. It is an absolutely shocking road, and there are only one or two houses down there, and for us to even consider the cost of having a report, I think is an absolute waste of money. So I would urge councillors to not go there. Thank you.
Any further contributions, Councillor Wheatley?
Thank you, Mayor. Just in regards to, thank you very much, Councillor Fox, for your contribution. Always the knowledge and history on council is valuable. I just had a question in regards to the cost of a report. I would see that it would be internal report that would be done rather than an external. I'm just wondering about the cost.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, yes, that's correct. It would be done by internal staff. It'll be the cost of someone going out there and doing an inspection on the section of road there, so probably either walking or possibly driving if they can get a four-wheel drive down that section of road there. It'll be the cost of actually measuring that up there and determining what would be needed in terms of actually upgrading that to a minimal standard for all vehicles, not just four-wheel drive vehicles. And then I don't think we would go too much further than that. Certainly with the original report there, they talked about that there was a lot of consultation. I don't think we'd go down that track at this stage there. We would just provide the costings.
Any further speakers? Councillor Grace, did you want to reply?
I just raise this in fairness, councillors, for respect to those people. I wouldn't like to see somebody die up there and we fail to do what we're asked to do because we are elected members by the public, and I was asked by residents to raise this issue, and that's all I'm doing. I'm quite happy for a simple report to come back. That's all I'm asking for.
Thanks, Councillor Grace. So the motion is that a report be prepared into options and costs, both capital and ongoing, of reopening sections of Halls Track Road to all vehicles. It was moved by Councillor Grace and seconded by Councillor Reid. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? We'll have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillors Grace, Street, Reid, Westwood, Cordova, Midgley and Winter. And those against is Councillors Fox and Wass. The motion is carried. Next item is petition still being actioned, a report in response to the petitions headed Save the Bruny Island Boat Club can be found on page 39 of this agenda. Petitions received in the last period, there's a petition that's been received which is item 13.1, new hydrotherapy swimming pool similar to Beach Road Orchard Pool in Margate. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder of the report. Councillor Fox moves and seconded by Councillor Street. And the motion is that the petition containing 540 signatures be received and referred to the appropriate department for a report to council. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against, that motion is carried. Now we move to officers' reports to council, and as per the earlier motion, we're going to go straight to the one that most people are here for, which is North Roslyn Avenue, which is on the agenda. It starts on page 69 and there's a recommended motion on page 74. Looking for a mover and a seconder.
of the recommended motion first, or if someone's got an alternative they might have. Oh, Councillor Reith.
I have an alternative motion that I'd like to move. Do you want me to read
it? Yeah, that'd be ideal.
Yes.
Oh, sure. Apologies, I didn't see any lights on, but if before you are welcome to do that, then, and in fact, in line with our previous discussion on this, yes, go for it. You just need to put your light on, that's all. Yep. So, Councillor Fox would like to move the original. Do we have a seconder for the original motion? Councillor Cordova. Councillor Fox.
I think it's an excellent report. I also think that the recommendation to undertake repairs and signage, particularly road pavement markings to reinforce the speed limit, we're going to do this for a 2-year period to monitor the effectiveness of the implemented treatments, and I think that is the first thing to be doing. I'm not ruling out a future change to 40k, but I think it is important that we try the signage and to reduce the speed limit for the first 2 years. I realise that there are 3 schools in Roslyn Avenue already. There's the Illawarra School, Blackmans Bay and St Aloysius. In all of those areas there is already a 40k zone. And it's more comfortable as a driver to drive at 40k, knowing that cars can come at you from out of driveways, and basically also better for residents. But this is officially a sub-arterial road, and I'm concerned that if we reduce the speed to 40k, then we're going to be forcing the cars off this road onto Beach Road, Osborne Esplanade and Mount Royal. And I think it's important to recognise that this is the sub-arterial road and they are collector roads only. There's very little travel time distance between travelling 40 or 50. And I realise that the safety margin is better at 40, but I think it's important that we try the other methods before we consider going down to 40k. And these have been identified by our professional engineering staff. And I'd say that the footpath repairs and other measures will make a big difference to the users of Roslyn Avenue, but it will also make a big difference to the residents who live there, hopefully. Thank you.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, through you, Mayor. This is a very comprehensive report, and I note the previous discussion and the ongoing community concern around this, and I think testament to that community concern is the number of people in the public gallery tonight, and I think we should heed that community concern, but we also need to balance that against, you know, this very comprehensive report and the staff experts' suggestions as well. I wanted to second this motion so that we could discuss it before we hear whatever potential amendments might be put forward, but I guess at this stage it's a very vexed issue. I mean, obviously safety needs to come first, and you know, ultimately, you know, if one person gets hurt, then that's one person too many, and that's a good principle to recognise, but we also obviously need to counterbalance that against you know, the realities of the situation. I mean, there's some incredible things here, like Table 2 in 4.17. Table 2 summarises the 2018 traffic data. The highest recorded speed of 118.6 kilometres per hour north of Jindabyne Road. I mean, these are shocking. These are shocking figures. So basically, I'm going to, you know, reserve my decision. It's a really tricky area, and there's a whole lot of information available, and I will just keep an open mind as this debate progresses.
Councillor Reith.
Thank you. I don't support the motion as printed and would like to foreshadow that I would move an amendment to it. And the amendment would be to add a new point F. So F would be renumbered to G, and F would read recommend to the Department of State Growth that the speed limit on Roslyn Avenue between Beach Road and Kinderbine Road be reduced to 40 kilometres per hour.
Councillor Gray seconds the amendment. Councillor Reid.
Thank you. Look, as other councillors have said, this is an excellent report, but unfortunately there was one issue missing from it, and that is in relation to the reduction of the speed limit. We've got the evidence now in two traffic studies that motorists are continuing to speed along that particular section of Roslyn Avenue. And I know that I have to find myself constantly looking at my speedo when I'm going along there, because you can accidentally go above it. And the problem, as I see it, is one of safety, and we've been very, very fortunate, I think, but just by good luck, that there haven't been serious crashes or injuries to pedestrians or problems with cars coming out of driveways to date. And there were very high hopes that when Algona Road was opened up that people would take that as an alternative route, but we do know from this report, and it says it very clearly, that people are still continuing to use that North Roslyn Avenue section. It's convenient for many residents. And if that's the case, we're not going to be very effective in changing their habits and encouraging them to use, I don't believe, alternatives like Algona Road. People are creatures of habit, and habits are the hardest things to change. And so the problem, as I see it, if we go back to what our vision is and in our strategic plan, community is at the heart of everything we do. We have a group of residents who are saying to us that they have particular difficulties getting in and out of their driveways. I know that is a fact. I've had friends who live along that area who have talked about the amount of time that they wait to try and get in or out of their driveways, and they do so at their own peril on those occasions. We have pedestrians who have said to us very clearly that they are concerned about walking along there and, heaven forbid, doing that with a pram or being an elderly person with a mobility device or something like that. It's a very difficult section of road. We know that. It is narrow, it is twisting and turning. And if people are consistently speeding in that area and making it much more difficult for residents to get in and out of their houses, then I believe it is incumbent upon us to recommend to the Department of State Growth that the speed limit be lowered so that those residents have greater opportunity to do what is their right, and that is to get out of their property in a safe and a timely manner. We have asked Department of State Growth to lower the speed limit on a lot of other in a lot of other sections of road. And the 40 kilometres an hour, we've got it just out here in front of us. We've got it down at Kingston Beach already. It is not unusual to have a 40 kilometre speed limit. We can't make the decision here ourselves, but we can strongly recommend to the Department of State Growth that we believe it is in the interests of the residents of our community to lower the speed limit and hope that they take that advice. I believe the other recommendations are very good and will also be of assistance, and so what we're presenting to the community is a whole package to try and relieve some of the problems that now have been well identified. So I do hope that in moving this amendment that other councillors can take that on board, and that we can go to the Department of State Growth with a united voice on behalf of our community.
Councillor Grace.
Yes, look, I wholly support Councillor Reid's motion here. It has to be done. There's no question about it. In some parts of the report, it says to monitor, get the police in. We had that. When I was chair of the Road Safety Committee here with this council, it was raised virtually nearly every time we sat as a Road Safety Committee meeting on ways to reduce the speed. In fact, we were the first council to raise the speed down to 40 kilometres in our main area, in our towns. And we got awarded for that at some road safety workshop that I went to on behalf of council some 5-6 years ago. So we set the lead in bringing the speed limit down to 40 kilometres. and we can go back to the police as much as we like. They're not going to resolve the issue. We can help by resolving to reduce it to 40. Then if we continue to get the speeding on the road, that again is where the police come in, and maybe it's time we put a camera on the road if it's going to continue to happen. Put a camera there and let's catch them red-handed. But I'm pleased that that we have, because in the report on page 73, 9.4, council has not made any formal application to the state growth. I'm surprised that we didn't make some investigation into it when all this has been raised with a petition. But at least now we are on the right track, Mayor.
Councillor Vinchley, I think you were next.
I think I was. Happy either way.
Sure.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mayor, and thank you also to the residents. You live locally. You know what's going on this part of Roslyn Avenue. I'm a cyclist, and I actually find cycling that part of North Roslyn Avenue often one of the most scariest experiences in Kingston. I often have cars zooming past me only to greet them again at the traffic lights, and I want to sort of wave, you know, say, hello, how are you? Thanks for speeding past me there. Often very, very many hairy moments. I was actually pondering putting forward that amendment as well, but I had a conversation with staff in regards to why, as council, in the report, we did not recommend the 40 kilometres an hour, and I guess it was in regards to the, as Councillor Fox raised, to the other surrounding roads as well, and I'm just wondering if council staff, Mayor, could actually clarify why perhaps that wasn't put forward in the report for us to understand. Reed.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, that's correct. So that's fairly clearly stated in the Church and Do report that was forwarded to Council there, that by itself changing a speed limit is not necessarily going to be effective. It also has a cause and effect on other surrounding roads as well at the same time there. The comments in the Church and Do report would be not to support that unless you actually looked at the entirety of the surrounding network as well in terms of that cause and effect, and looked at any of the traffic calming measures that might be needed for those particular roads as well at the same time.
Thank you. Had we ever thought about perhaps writing to state growth as recommended in the amended motion to see their thoughts? That's one opportunity. But also, had we thought about perhaps doing this as a trial to see how it goes? Sometimes I do that in other states.
Mr. Reeve. Through you, Mayor. Changing speed limits is not necessarily a great thing to do as a trial, because as I mentioned just a minute ago there, it's important to have all the other cues in place there to make those effective there. So if you were just to change to a 40k speed limit sign there, it may not necessarily achieve what you actually wanted to achieve. In terms of your first part of the question there, in terms of actually going to state growth, the trigger to go to state growth would be a reason why we wanted to change to 40k there. So typically that's done in particularly in those high pedestrian areas there where you've got a lot of conflict between pedestrians and vehicles there. So you'll see that in a lot of CBD areas, for example, there, or you may see it in some other precinct areas similar to what we've done down at Kingston Beach as well at the same time. North Roslyn doesn't quite fit into that category there. It's more of a large distributor of vehicles as compared to pedestrian movements. So that's one reason to not necessarily petition state growth directly. If we went to state growth there, one of the things they will do is they'll rely on the information that we've actually got there to help make their decision as well at the same time. And so they'll look at all the information we've got, including the report that we have from GH&D. So, for example, if we went back to state growth and actually said, based on what we've got now, we just want to put 40k speed limit signs in North Roslyn Avenue, they might find that more difficult to actually accept there without having all the other supporting information as to what might happen on the surrounding streets.
Thank you. Just one more thing. I just noted in the report, and sorry, correct me if I'm wrong, but there was noted there was low pedestrian activity, and I think that just for me means when we have that, it just means that people are feeling unsafe to walk around, as Councillor Reid said, people with prams, different mobility issues and things like that. I think that if we can be a municipality that makes our streets safe, that makes our walking footpaths and everything safe, it means that people will actually get out and walk and utilise these more. So perhaps if it was lowered to 40, we would perhaps see more people walking around because they'd feel safer.
Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor, and I thank Councillor Reid for bringing forward this amendment. I do think that we have a responsibility to listen to our community, and if we are able to recommend to the Department of State Growth that the speed limit be reduced, then I think that we should do that. I think it is a symptom of a broader issue that we have at the moment in our municipality about our roads. So Roslyn Avenue, yes, it is a sub-arterial road, but likewise Auburn Road is classified at the moment as a local road, and I don't think from the feedback I've had that Auburn Road is being used as a local road. I think Auburn Road has become a sub-arterial road in recent times, and there's certainly issues with both Auburn Road and Roslyn Avenue for the residents that live on those roads. I think part of the problem is the roundabout at the fork in the road at Mitre 10. It's not working as it should. I think hopefully, as part of our involvement in the Greater Hobart City deal, we can use some of the funding we have to relieve congestion, and in particular, I'm aware that the state government are looking at ways to improve the flow of traffic at that roundabout. So I think if the state government can work to free up traffic at the roundabout up near the fork in the road, that will hopefully reduce the time it takes to go from Blackmans Bay up to town that way, so people won't need to use Roslyn Avenue as much as they are at the moment. So I support the amended motion, and I do hope that it goes some way to alleviate the problems that residents are experiencing, and in conjunction with the rest of the recommendations, I hope that they can safely walk and pull in and out of their driveways.
Thank you, Mayor. My starting remarks would be that all roads and streets need a full investigation and a decision made in the interests of the urban Kingston Blackmans Bay area. Councillor Westwood talks about Algona Road, and Council probably has made a wrong decision with Algona Road some time ago, and the Department of State Growth have also to blame with the slowness of traffic, and one of the probably compounding reasons where people take the next best option, which is Roslyn Avenue. I listen around the table with interest because I find that councillors are talking as traffic engineers, and yet I don't believe any of them have a traffic diploma or etc. Particularly when I read, and you certainly don't have a traffic.
Councillor Grace.
Thank you, Councillor Grace.
Councillor Grace. The floor.
Councillor Grace, just go back, rest, sleep.
You go to sleep, you've done that.
Point of order.
Okay. Councillor Grace, that's a warning. Please allow Councillor Woss to continue his contribution. Councillor Woss.
However, we have a professional report. Councillor Grace, we do. We have a professional report before us, which we're going to not listen. We're going to disregard. We're also in relation to 9.1, where the police have advised that it is not considered a priority. So not only are we going against a professional report, we're going against the local police as well. Any changes that we make, we need to involve the whole community, not part of the community. And that includes the people that use it. And what options should we provide to take some of the traffic off Roslyn Avenue? The question could be, what happens if this goes through and the traffic stays there? Now, a person I knew who has now left the area
to be closer to family used to live in Roslyn Avenue. Roslyn Avenue used to be a 60 kilometre area. Council made the decision to reduce it to 50. He said he had more problems getting in and out of his drive at 50 k's than he did at 60, because there was no gap within the traffic. That was something that he hadn't encountered or didn't believe would occur, and certainly he did encounter. The other issues is, what other roads are going to be impacted? There are a number of roads that can be impacted. What about the residents in those areas? What consideration have we given to those? None whatsoever. We're talking about, let's try and resolve the issue of Roslyn Avenue, and we don't give a damn about the others. Then we'll have the same issue in those streets. So where does it end? There will be rat runs that will start, probably along roads and streets that we never even thought of. And that, again, will create an issue. So I would sooner see us do it right the first time than make a few changes now, and again, and again, and again, and at the end of that period of time, probably find that we've gone backwards and created more issues than we have by not overcoming the issue that we have on North Roslyn Avenue. There is just about as much traffic on the southern side of Roslyn Avenue from St Aloysius. So what's the equality in those people that come out of one of the streets there and want to go to Kingston? So on that basis, Mayor, I will vote against the recommendation amendment.
Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. I very much struggle with this because I understand the concerns of residents in the area and understand why they want the speed limit reduced to 40 kilometres an hour. I do, however, also take Councillor Wass's point that we've got before us a report by traffic engineers which is saying that reducing the speed limit is simply not going to make the difference that you all hope that it will. It's not going to make me popular with any of you, and I understand that, and I apologise for that. You should take some comfort in the fact that it looks like I'm probably going to lose anyway. But I simply can't support it when there's not the evidence there to suggest that it's going to make the difference that you hope it's going to make. And when we're in a situation where, if state growth did agree to that 40 kilometre an hour speed limit and the outcome was worse, we are going to have an awful time trying to reverse that decision. Like Councillor Wass, I understand that we need to find a solution to this problem, and I'm willing to work with any community member who thinks that they have the answer, but on this occasion I just don't think it's this, and so I can't support it. And I do apologise for that, because I know so many of you want it, but I need to make a decision that I think is right and that I think is in the best interest of the community as a whole, and on this occasion I don't think it is this amendment.
Any further speakers on the amendment? For my own contribution, I'd like to echo the comments of Councillors Wass and Street. I wish it was as easy as to drop the speed limit to 40 kilometres an hour, but there's a very strong, in fact, body of evidence here that says that's, and a number of engineers who are telling us that's not what they're recommending. At this point, in fact, and I'll wait till later, the viewpoint that the speed limit should be changed to 40 isn't supported by staff, it's not supported by GHD. And I think the point that hasn't been made yet that probably should be is that I think it's unlikely, whilst it's possible, it's unlikely this would be supported by state growth. We can recommend, and perhaps that's what some people are hoping, we recommend, and council appeases people here, but perhaps we're just getting your hopes up, because without evidence from engineers and from GHD, who have had a very long look at this, I suspect they're not going to look favourably on the recommendation. I'll make a larger contribution on the substantive motion.
Question?
Councillor Grace, I think you've already spoken.
Question, yes. How many more years do you think it's going to take before council can do something? How many more years is it going to take, Mayor?
I don't know, Councillor Grace. Thanks for your question. Okay, Councillor Reid, would you like to sum up?
Thank you. I would just briefly, because I think there are a number of things that do that have been mentioned by councillors and their contributions that should be highlighted. First and foremost, yes, the GHD report said that lowering the speed limit would not be helpful if it was done alone. And that is not what we're proposing. We're proposing it as a suite of measures here. So I think that is a significant point. We're not just getting rid of points A to F and replacing it with reducing the speed limit. We know that's not going to solve the problem. We're simply wanting to add this as yet another weapon, if you like, in the arsenal to try and resolve the problems that exist on North Roslyn Avenue. A point was made, and apologies, I can't recall who made it, about Kingston Police and their attitude to this. They did make the point, yes, they did say they believe there were a low percentage of excess speeding. I don't agree with that analysis of that. But what they did say was that they couldn't give it much attention due to limited resourcing. So that is the issue. They don't have the time to go and stand there with speed cameras and to catch the speeding motorists. So that is, you know, a significant... If they're saying it's a low priority because of that, then we're not going to see them there. Let's not kid ourselves that they're all of a sudden now going to go and spend more time there, because they've already made it clear they do not have the resources to do so. Look, we've reduced the speed limit in other parts of the municipality. Have we created rat runs in those areas, as one councillor has just suggested? Have we actually... does it mean that we've created a problem all around this area or in Kingston Beach because we were... had enough foresight to reduce the speed limit and, as Councillor Gray said, win a road safety award in the process? This is about safety. And if it takes somebody a minute longer to get to work, well, big deal, a minute longer, but it does mean that people can walk around the municipality, that part of the municipality, safely. They can take their babies in prams, kids on bikes, pedestrians can walk safely. And I think it's a great shame if we were to lose this, that we're not taking the opportunity to send a message to State Grace to please consider this.
Okay, so we're just dealing with the amendment, and the amendment was moved by Councillor Reid and seconded by Councillor Grace, and it adds a new point to the recommendation, which is recommend to the Department of State Growth that the speed limit on Roslyn Avenue between Beach Road and Jindabyne Road be reduced to 40 kilometres an hour. All those in favour of the amendment, please say aye. Those against? Okay, we'll have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hands. Councillor Grace, Reid, Westwood, Cordover, and Midgley. And those against is Councillors Street, Fox, Wass, and Winter. And the amendment is carried. And that now becomes part of the substantive motion. Okay, we're back to the substantive motion. Councillor Reid, did you want to continue to speak to the substantive motion?
Everyone's sick of the sound of my voice. I'll just say ditto to everything that I've just said. And I look forward to Council putting together a submission to the Department of State Growth should this now pass that would recommend the lowering of the speed limit.
Yes, for my substantive contribution, I wanted to put on the public record that Tricia Ramsey has been the champion of this for 3 or 4 years, and I know a lot of members of the North Roslyn community here tonight, a lot probably for the first time. Tricia, you might not know, has been here at every council meeting, I think, for that entire time. The number of questions she's asked on notice, without notice, on this issue has been phenomenal, and it appears as though you've got what you wanted tonight, and you should all be very thankful for the contribution that she's made. I think that what hasn't been discussed very well tonight in the report is that there actually are a number of other parts to this, not just the 40 kilometres, and I think they will make a positive difference. I do take Councillor Reid's point made earlier that the 40 kilometres will be more effective with those other additions. The fact that, though, goes back to we've done an enormous amount of work on this, and Mr. Reeve has done, and his team have done, an enormous amount of work on North Roslyn to get to this point. the using GHD, the amount of council resources that's gone into this single issue has been huge, because there is an issue there, and I think you heard all 10 of us acknowledge that there is an issue on North Roslyn Avenue. So I wanted to acknowledge all of those things, and I hope that the whole motion is a success. Would anyone else like to make a substantive contribution? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Really this report tonight shows our growing municipality and the impact that's having on many of our roads, and the increasing infill development in Blackmans Bay having the impact on there. The recent study from the Kingston to Margate study highlighted they're actually surprised at the lower number of vehicles than expected turning out onto Howden Road. And I think it is, again, just that what Councillor Westwood mentioned before in regards to the roundabout and the hold-up there. So people are actually choosing the Roslyn Avenue area. But for me, it's a whole kind of cycle of we have had so many discussions around transport in our municipality, and I see this as all sort of part of that circle, really. It's about how, really, do we get cars off the road? And again, there's not enough frequent buses. It's easier to drive into Firthside or Kingston to catch your bus. There's other matters, like there's no bike parking at bus shelters. So if we wanted residents around that area to actually even consider, say, going to ride their bike down, I mean, let's face it, we are all time poor. We want to get places as fast as we can, and driving along that way is actually the fastest way, say, to get into Kingston. But even there, I think there are like issues where I was riding along the road thinking, oh, there's a bus coming, I'll park my bike. There was nowhere to park my bike at a bus stop, and then I actually ended up getting to park at Kingston Council and then parking my bike and actually getting on a bus anyway. But I think we had to look at it as a whole picture. We need to get people out of cars and different ways, and hopefully lowering it to 40 km might mean that people actually might start walking. But I guess I just wanted to note that there are a lot of bigger things at play as well. We do want to get people out of cars and off Roslyn Avenue, I guess, as a way. So it'd be great as a councillor if we can aim to look at that as well. I just had a couple of questions just in regards to the road pavement markings, and I was not aware that that was something that we did in Tasmania, and I understand the upkeep and maintenance of that. Actually, just when I was cycling in to the meeting tonight, I noticed there's a marking outside of, I think it was Blackmans Bay Primary, that is pretty much worn off. And I guess I just have a question for our staff, Mayor, in regards to, for one, I did not think that that was something that we did, road pavement markings in Tasmania.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. No, that's correct. It's not. It's certainly done in some of the other jurisdictions on the mainland. So it would be something we would need to take up with state growth as well in terms of support for that particular measure.
Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, as I foreshadowed in my contribution on the amendment, happy to work with any member of the community that has a solution to this problem. Albeit I don't agree with the amendment, I agree with the rest of the substantive motion, and I'm also not a sore loser. I'm very happy for all of you, and I hope that you get the outcome that you want when it goes to DSG. So I will be voting for the motion as amended, and I sincerely hope that whatever one of those measures works, whether it is one of them, all of them in combination, or one or two of them together, we find a solution that helps you use that road on a daily basis as well as everybody else in the community.
Okay, there being no... Oh, Councillor Fox.
I did move the original motion.
You're summing up then. Good.
I just wanted to make a point, I guess, that when I read this report, I was quite torn. It wasn't an easy question for me, and I had prepared a speech to support the 40-kilometre speed, but at the same time, I have great respect for our engineering advice, and I had hoped that we could do the other suggested amendments to the road to make it safer to start with before we went down this path. But I'm not upset about this decision, and I guess it's important for us to realise the implication of not just this on the Roslyn Avenue residents, but on other road users in greater Kingborough area. I hope that it's not going to have a detrimental impact on surrounding streets, but I personally think it's probably, if people do travel at 40k, they'll probably end up driving at the original 50k anyway, just like most people who are supposed to be driving 50 are now doing 60. And that's what worries me. So I think there might even be more requirement for speed reduction, for roadside calming, traffic calming on the side of the road that hasn't even been mentioned yet. But we've got to do what we can and see what the Department of State Growth says, and I hope that they do agree to this recommendation. Thank you.
Okay, so the motion, as moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Cordova, is that Council A liaise with the Department of State Growth to arrange the modifications to the existing directional signage at the Roslyn Avenue Algona Road roundabout to encourage motorists of Algona Road to travel to central Kingston via Algona Road, B, install repeater speed limit signage and investigate the provision of road pavement markings to reinforce the speed limit, C, liaise with the Department of State Growth to consider a reduction in the overall cycle time of the Beach Road Roslyn Avenue traffic lights to reduce queues on Roslyn Avenue, D, undertake annual counts at Site 1 and Site 2 for a 2-year period to monitor the effectiveness of the implementation treatments, E, undertake any necessary footpath repairs within its current maintenance budget, and F, advise the petitioners of all measures, F, recommend to the Department of State Growth that the speed limit on Roslyn Avenue between Beach Road and Jindabyne Road be reduced to 40 kilometres an hour, and G, advise the petitioners of all measures which will be undertaken. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against, we'll have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hands. Councillor Grace, Street, Reet, Westwood, Fox, Cordova, Minchley, Winter, and those against is Councillor Wass. And the motion is carried. Now move. Yeah, so we'll have a quick, if people want to leave, unless you're really interested, you're welcome to stay. It's very exciting. Also welcome to leave if you like. Yep. Thank you, sir. Well, we understand.
Can you make note of it?
There's no argument. You're right.
Thank you. You can do it then. Every day.
I don't know why he's so angry, he just got everything he wanted. Okay, the next item is
page 32.
We go to the Kingborough Draft Local Provision Schedule, Tasmanian Planning Scheme. There's a recommendation on page 38. Councillor Fox would like to move that recommended motion, and the seconder, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Fox.
A lot of work's gone into preparing this, and what we're asking is that it go to the community and to the commission, so I'd be happy for staff to take us through it if they so require. I don't feel professionally able to do so. Thank you.
Mr. Ferry or Ms. Tyler Moore?
Through the chair, yes, this is a project that was largely done by the strategic planner, which was employed by council, Dustin Moore. We haven't been able to replace that position, unfortunately, but so I won't take the credit for all the work that's being done, but I have gone through and just reformatted a few things and just brought it up to date and a few things like that. But basically it's the work that he did over a period of about 9 months. So it's an important step in the process. It's an important step to kick off the statutory process by which we are able to form a new Kingborough planning scheme. As you would know, this is the local provision schedule's component of it, which complements the state planning provisions, which are already adopted by the state government. So these are essentially the local components within the planning scheme, primarily the zoning maps and the code overlays. So it's really a process now whereby this material goes to the Commission. The Commission checks whether it's actually compliant with the legislation and then instructs the Council to place it on public exhibition. So that may well be a few months away before that actually happens, but it's important that we take this step so we can kick off that statutory process and the public gets an opportunity to look at the draft and to comment on it.
Councillor Street.
Look, just a question, Mayor. Question's got two parts. Firstly, I'm just wondering if Mr. Furrier might be able to take us through the timeline for the process. And secondly, whether or not this is Council's final opportunity to make any amendment to this, or whether or not we'll have another opportunity to revisit the local provision schedules after the consultation has occurred.
Mr. Ferrier.
Through the Chair, the short answer is yes, there will be. The process, as I said, is that we now, if this is endorsed tonight, it would be forwarded on to the Planning Commission, so the Planning Commission can then do their checks against the legislation that it is actually compliant. They then instruct us to put on public exhibition. It goes on public exhibition for 60 days, and it's our full intention to promote that as widely as possible and to notify as many people as possible and to conduct us, whether it be public meetings or one-on-ones or drop-in sessions, whatever it takes to explain to people and ensure that they understand what's happening. What happens then is during that 60-day period, everybody puts their submissions into Council. Following that 60-day period, another report is prepared, which is a summary, actually quite a detailed analysis of all those submissions. But there's also the opportunity for Council to present its own submission. So there is an opportunity for Council to identify where changes need to be made, or whether even mistakes might have been made or errors within the draft. And we can lodge our own submission to ourselves, in effect. We've done that in past planning schemes. When the interim planning scheme was prepared, that happened. And so what happens then is that actual report comes to Council with all the material. It's usually also a very large report because we'd anticipate there'd be a lot of submissions. The Council then makes a decision as to what changes it would recommend to the Commission in relation to the draft LPS. That material then goes to the Commission, including all the submissions, and then the Commission conducts public hearings, of which obviously the Council is represented, and all the representors have an opportunity to speak to those hearings and put forward their point of view as far as to what changes should be made. The Commission considers that, and then they produce their own report on the matter and present that to the Minister, and the Minister at the end of the day declares the local provision schedule and we have a new planning scheme.
Faster, better, quicker, whatever the... Yep, thanks, Mayor. Just a follow-up question. I take it then that if we decide that some amendment is required after this point, we're basically throwing ourselves at the feet of the Commission to make that amendment, are we?
We are at every stage, essentially. The planning scheme is approved by the Commission. It's not something that the Council approves, but we can promote as much as we can what we think is appropriate to go into the local provision schedule. They have their own writing instructions, in the sense that they're trying to create a consistent suite of planning schemes across the state. I would imagine that there are in place certain guidelines that they've sent out for us that we have to comply with, and they would try to ensure that they are complied with in relation to the sorts of decisions that we make in relation to the planning scheme. And we've certainly tried to do that in the draft LPS that's before you now. But yes, it may well be that we want to do things, but the Commission might say, no, that is inconsistent with the guidelines that they produced and it's inconsistent with the decisions we've made for all the other planning schemes in the state, and yes, Kingborough Council, you must comply with it in this way. So, no, we don't necessarily get all we would like. At the end of the day, it is the Commission's decision.
Mm-hmm. Look, I know it says 60 days and Mr Ferrier just said 60 days. Well, when will that commence? Not right on Christmas, will it? Because we do this to public every time. Just bring such a document to council.
So there's another stage before that. So tonight we're sending this off
to the
Commission. It doesn't get actually publicly advertised until we think around March. Is that right? That best case scenario, Mr Ferrier?
Yeah, through the chair, that's about right. I mean, I sent some notes to one or two people today that just indicated that at this stage, well, there's 29 councils in this state, about 20 of those councils have actually lodged their local provision schedules with the Commission, mm-hmm. but only 6 or 7 have actually been advertised, so there's quite a queue.
Yeah.
So we're probably at the end of the queue when we put ours in, so it'll be quite a few months, I imagine, before we actually publicly advertise the draft. By the time the Commission gets around to notifying us.
Yep. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Mr Ferrier, for the outline of the community consultation. I'm just wondering, you mentioned public meetings. Would they be held on Bruny Island and the down the channel areas as well, or just in council?
Mr Ferrier.
Through the chair, I think we have an open mind on that completely. It's if any particular community wants to have a public meeting, then I'd be happy to do that. Or council staff would be happy to do that. We're here to try and explain it as well as we possibly can. When we did the review of the, and this is going back a long way, but I know Wayne Burgess in the gallery remembers it. But when we did the review of the 2000 scheme back in 2006. We ended up doing 16 public meetings over a period of 12 months. So it's something we're prepared to do. I know we've only got the 60 days, and we'll try and make sure that we get those public meetings in as early as possible during that period so that people have got time to think about it, and because they need those. But often the most popular places for people to attend the public meetings are places like Middleton and Woodbridge, more so than you find in places like Kingston and Taroona and places like that.
There are no further speakers. Would Councillor Fox like to sum up? Okay. I was expecting a very long debate on this. Anyway, but let's not complain. Let's move on. Councillor, this motion was moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Midgley, and it is that Council A resolve that it is satisfied that Kingborough draft local provision schedule attachments A and B meets the local provision schedule criteria prescribed in section 34 of the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993, B endorse the Kingborough draft local provision schedule attachments A and B and the Kingborough draft local provision schedule supporting report attachment E for submission to the Tasmanian Planning Commission under section 35(1) of the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993, C delegate under section 6 of the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993 the following powers and functions to the General Manager and the Manager of Development Services. 1. Modify the Kingborough draft local provision schedule as a notice. If a notice is received from the Tasmanian Planning Commission under section 35(5)(b) of the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993 or agree to such modifications being undertaken by the Tasmanian Planning Commission under section 35(5)(c) and advise Council of any such modification, to exhibit the Kingborough draft local provision schedule in accordance with section 35(c) and 35(d) of the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993, and 3. Represent Council at hearings held in response to representations made in relation to the Kingborough draft local provision schedule under 35H of the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993. D. Endorse the intended public communication and consultation arrangements relating to the exhibition of the Kingborough draft local provision schedule as detailed in section 7 of this report. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against. Motion is carried. Okay. Just on that, we are
We have actually, because we were expecting quite a long meeting, we've actually got a little bit of food, so we're going to take a break at around 7:30 for the, and probably take a break for 10 or 15. Yeah, well, we could do that, yeah. The next item is on page 39, and it's the Bruny Island Boat Club petition with the recommended motion, page 42. Councillor Grace moves, seconded by Councillor Midgley. Councillor Grace, did you want to speak to this?
Not really, Mayor.
No, neither.
Recommendations.
Any further comments? Councillor Fox.
I have got concerns about this. I realise we've got a quote and we've got a guidance from professional people on this, and we're obviously selecting the cheapest option. I've done the coastal management process twice, a course, and I know that having seen that log at the front of this piece of sand, it's eroding underneath the log. The rocks will probably have a very similar effect. Rocks like that are really effective, but only if they're on a rock shelf and not in sand. So it's not, from the photographs I've seen, it's pretty sandy on this beach, and I think that's also obvious by the photos in the drawings attached. I'm concerned that by council staff providing in-kind assistance and project managing and technical advice makes us responsible for the failure of this process. We may well have a technical expert who's given us advice of what to do, but for us to take that responsibility now and to actually manage the project is a great concern to me, because we've got no fallback if it fails. So I would like to ask whether council has any staff members who are expert on coastal management, on staff, engineers.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. I'm looking around at my esteemed colleagues there and they're all looking very blankly. No, we don't have anyone there who I would deem as an expert on coastal management. We certainly have staff on board who have done very similar courses to what Councillor Fox has just mentioned there. The intention with this particular project there is not to rely on your internal staff to actually deliver that. So at the moment there, the consultants provided what I'd call a high-level conceptual type drawing. So it would be to rely on his expertise to actually develop that further into a detailed design for that area. So he's had many, many years' experience in that that area there, and done lots of projects of a similar ilk.
Well, that's a very heartening answer, but I still have concerns. I note in the report that the staff actually would prefer that the shed be moved, and that was not acceptable to the locals, and I think as a council we should be guided by the preference of our staff.
The club owns the structure. Well, it's not our decision, it's the club's decision. It's not, we don't own the land and we don't own the building.
I beg your pardon, I think we do own the land. No, we have a lease over the
land. We have a lease over the land, which we sublease to the boat club.
Yep. But as a council, if we insist that the building be moved, how would we go about that?
Every time we've corresponded with them, and this, for some background, this played out on social media a little bit, and the club started screenshotting emails and correspondence from our staff and putting them up online, and, the relationship between the club and the council wasn't very good. At that point, I insisted with the president that the secretary of the club, that the correspondence would be directed through me and we would correspond, and that if she had criticisms of the council, then she should direct it at the mayor, which she then did. That was nice. But during those, all the correspondence that then went out went through me, and all the correspondence, all the formal correspondence said, the first point we make is, we recommend you move the structure.
Yeah.
Please move the structure. This is an area that's under is under stress, and there's a history of coastal erosion that goes back a long way. The club absolutely steadfastly refuses to consider that, and then it becomes their issue, and that's why the other point that we made, point two, pretty much every time is we will not be paying for this structure because it doesn't align with our strategic priorities for coastal management. It's not our land. The structure's not ours. And so for all those reasons, we're not going to, whilst we're project managing it, the club is currently trying to seek funding from the state government to actually undertake the work. But we've said steadfastly that we're not paying for it. But as I said, the answer to your original part of your question, where we have continued to advise them they should move the shed.
I'm concerned that by doing this job, not only are we are putting in our own resources by having the technical management and advice, our own policy is that we don't protect coastal infrastructure unless it's our coastal infrastructure. So we're going against our own basic policy. And the other thing is, if we build this structure to protect a shed that could be moved, we could well be exacerbating the erosion and deflecting it further down the coast and making other infrastructure that we do own, putting that under stress and under threat. And this erosion didn't occur prior to that floating pontoon from Hobart being dumped there without permission in the late 70s, when the Hobart Bridge was demolished before the current Hobart Bridge is built. The pontoons were taken from there by the Bruny Island residents when it was a Bruny Island council, and it was placed there. Ever since, there's been erosion of this foreshore. And I don't think that us trying to fix the foreshore or stop the erosion of a sandy dune with rocks is going to make it very nice down there. It's going to increase the erosion further down the coast. It's also going to put a lot of bluestone on the beach, which is a very nice little beach. And we're totally involved by agreeing to do this. And I suggest that we revisit the concept of moving that shed, because there are places in that area where it's not eroding and where they could relax and have a nice shed for just storage of boat equipment. That's all it is. It's just a tin shed. And we're going to be aiding and abetting the spending of community money, which is significant, just to do something that I think is contrary to coastal processes. It's contrary to our own policy, and it's not good practice.
Councillor Grace, you've already spoken, but you could ask a question.
Sorry?
You moved the motion and spoke to it.
I haven't spoken to it.
No, you absolutely definitely did.
Sorry?
You definitely did.
What did I say? I can't.
Not much. It was very short, but you did make a...
I can close mine then. When
yeah, you could close. In fact, that's a good point. Yeah.
Is anyone else want
to... Yeah, after everyone's spoken, yeah, you can close up and make a contribution then, if you like. Yeah. Councillor Midgley?
Thank you, Mayor. I just have a question, actually. I'm not sure of the process. I am very grateful for Councillor Fox for providing that knowledge and insight. I just wondering if she has a foreshadowed motion or perhaps any thoughts in regards to that area. If we do, I know I did second this motion, but I didn't also know the knowledge that Councillor Fox has shared then. If we were to go against this, would she have a foreshadowed motion or another recommendation? I'm curious to know.
Councillor Fox.
I guess if we lost this motion, I mean, that's all I want. That might mean that we can come back and consider moving the boat shed, and that might mean that the community would realise that we mean business and that they have to move that boat shed, and then we will assist them in moving the boat shed. Do you want a motion?
Or you could just say, you foreshadow that if this is lost, I'll move a motion to the effect of what you said.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So Councillor Fox has foreshadowed a motion.
A question?
We've got Councillor Wass next, and then I'll go to you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Wass.
Thank you, Mayor. To put the record right, the part of the old floating bridge was put there legally, not illegally, and it was agreed to by the then Bruny Island Council. So that needs to be taken into consideration. Look, I hear what the community say there, but I'm also very concerned, and I would like to think if we're going to give in-kind assistance, it needs to be limited in-kind assistance, and certainly to reiterate that we're not going to undertake or fund the remediation works. The issue that comes to mind, of course, is what happened in New South Wales a number of years ago. That's still going on. And I consider that we will be opening Pandora's box as well, because any works that we may undertake or be involved that is undertaken to keep the sand in the area where it's being lost could negate sand. We could lose sand in other areas of the beach, which then creates an erosion problem. And not only could we lose the boat club's building, but we could lose our own toilets as well. So I think we've got to consider that. The option of moving the shed, they don't like. And look, I'm happy that they don't like that and they prefer to keep it where it is. But I think as a council, we have to make a decision that is in the best interest of all. And if that is that we will only assist in them moving the shed or whatever it might be, we should do this. One of the things that this council spoke on 10, 12, 14 years ago was that in due course, we have to retreat. We can't afford to do remediation works and keep everything hunky-dory as it was. The world is changing, climate change has reached us, and we are seeing the effects, and this is just one of those effects. If you look at where the weather comes from and where those winds rip up the water and make it, we're not going to stop it eroding. Certainly the logs on the beach haven't helped. In fact, some may say that it's been detrimental to the whole process. I'm not an expert, so I'll reserve my thoughts on that. But who suggested that went in, under whose authority, we would certainly want to question. So I'm comfortable with the motion, Mr. Mayor, providing, of course, that it is limited only assistance and that there will be no funding requirements, but I'm very, very cautious that at the end of the day, if the boat shed is lost in 5 years after a decent swell, the finger, unfortunately, will be pointed to council and say, this is council's problem. They wouldn't do this, they wouldn't do that, and henceforth we've lost our shed. So I think we need to be firm with the boat club and the members and let them know where we are going to draw the line.
Councillor Cordova, did you still want to ask a question?
Thanks, through you, Mayor. The question is about, I'm just trying to tease out whether to strike down the whole motion is the most effective way or whether an amendment could be proposed that would be useful. Something about strongly recommending that the boat club reconsider relocating the shed.
I would say we've corresponded with them four separate times, telling them move the shed. Meetings, letters, they do not want to move the shed that they own. The other point on that I should make is that the council actually approved the DA for where the shed is. This council, this planning authority, approved the shed only when it was built 5 or 6 years ago. And so I do have a pretty strong point on that. Councillor Midgley.
Sorry, one more question. Just in regards to what Councillor Wass has raised, if you do... Yeah, sorry, I'm just wondering how to word this one. So just his questions in regards to our in-kind assistance and the fact that we are supporting. I'm just wondering, I know that council staff have put forward this recommendation, but is it actually strong enough to mitigate the fact that they could come back and say, well, you did support and gave this technical advice and in-kind assistance and things like that? Is it strong enough that in 5 years, if perhaps the boat shed is lost, is this recommendation, do we believe, strong enough to mitigate that? So as Councillor Wass has said, in regards to what Councillor Wass said, that say in 5 years, if the boat shed is, the erosion continues to occur, we've said can be advised that council will provide in-kind assistance through project management and technical advice. If they then come back to us and say, well, you provided the in-kind assistance and technical advice, therefore this is what we've done, but the boat shed, like, what responsibility do we have? Is it strong enough? Do we need stronger wording? I guess I'm just making sure that it is strong enough.
In the discussions I've had, particularly with Mr. Reid, but also with Mr. Dahl over this, that one of the reasons why we've would offer this advice is because if this is the direction the club has taken and someone else is going to, and they do manage to secure, this is all if they manage to secure funding for the project, we want to make sure it is a success. And the best way that we can ensure this is, because the alternative here is that the boat club manage the project, and I suspect if our council engineers manage the project, it's a better chance of being a success. The other part of the, in terms of the cost and in-kind support, the ask that the boat club has put to the state government is in the order of around $100,000. That money actually will pay for some of the project management component of this. Is that correct, Mr. Reeve? That money would also contribute back to council our project management part. I think that's a nodding of yes. And it can't get a light on. Yes.
Mayor, yes.
Yes. So, in terms of it may, if they do manage to secure the entire amount of money, and the club also has some money to put in, then in fact the cost to council would be nothing, because even their in-kind support would be funded through the entire project cost, because that is a real part of the cost of any project, is between 10% and 20% project management cost. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I had a couple of questions. How many years do we expect the remediation works to buy the club in terms of time?
Mr. Dahl or Mr. Reeve question? Sure. Oh, Mr. Smee, sorry.
Through you, Mayor, best guess around 30 years minimum. That's just the best guess.
So if we were to provide support, in-kind support for the option of putting rocks in place. And I do take the point that I think if that's going to happen, I'd have more confidence in our staff doing it, because I don't think the log is particularly effective that the club's put in there. So if the option one, armour rock protection, $60,000, that is likely to buy the club 30 years before the existing structure would need to be relocated. Is that correct?
Mr. Smith?
Yes, Mayor, that's what we're saying.
And the $60,000 will be paid for by the Bruny Island Boat Club?
The club, I think, has an order of sort of around $10,000, but they're already in discussions with ministers with the state government to secure the funding. That the number they're asking for is, I believe, more around 90 to 100,000, because the 60,000 is just an estimate, and then you've got your project management costs and those sort of on costs that we would hope to recoup, if possible, out of this as well.
So council will not be paying $60,000?
No, we're not.
Will council be paying towards that?
Zero.
Zero. So we'll be paying nothing, but we'll be offering in-kind support, which is likely to buy the club 30 years.
Well, yeah, the in-kind support allows the project to happen and make sure it's done professionally. And at the end, at the other point, and Mr. Reeve, apologies if I've stuffed this up, get your light on, this is going to end up on our asset register. Is that right? Likely to end up on our asset, or it might be Mr. Smee? No? Not going to? I'll ask you as a question. Will this end up on our asset register?
Are you referring to the boat club or the remediation works? I would suggest yes.
Yeah, so the point I'm trying to make is that this asset is going to end up on our asset register, so we want to make sure it's a good asset, because we're going to be it's going to be ours for the 30 years.
Okay, thank you. in light of those answers, I do share some reservations around this as well. I do think that ultimately the only real solution is retreat and relocate, but the club has made it very clear that they're not willing to consider this at this point in time. I do have more comfort in council assisting with in-kind support for project management to hopefully put in place some measures that will buy the club another 30 years, and I hope that over the course of the 30 years, as the club becomes more educated and perhaps comes to accept the fact that their boat club will need to be relocated, that they will do that. And whilst they own the asset, I guess we can't make them relocate their boat club, but we can do what we can, offer in-kind support to help them. So I will support the motion as it is put forth.
Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, I support the motion as moved, and I'm very happy to be providing in-kind support to the project, given that that's what the boat club have decided they want to do. I'd hate for them to lose sight of the fact that we've told them many, many times that the best option is to move the shed, and if the worst were to happen in 5 or 10 years, it wouldn't be beyond me to remind them of the fact that we did tell them half a dozen times that the best option was to move the boat shed, but I sincerely hope that it does buy them the 30-year estimate and that they get 30 enjoyable years out of it. Can I just flag that actually of far more concern to me in this report is the fact that we didn't have a formal written lease in place for the boat shed. Actually of far more concern to me than any of the report in relation to coastal erosion matters, all of which are eminently fixable one way or another. What's not fixable is if there is a problem in relation to that lease and the responsibilities and obligations of the parties in that arrangement. Don't know, may have helped in this circumstance to have had that in place, but nonetheless flag that that's actually far more concerning to me than anything else in this report, and would hope that it's an anomaly rather than the norm.
Councillor Grace, would you like to sum up?
I'd love to. Mayor, I just, honestly, and I don't want to be critical, but this just shows how out of touch councillors are in their own community. Out of touch. Mayor, Councillor Watts was mayor. He was aware of the erosion. Now, I'm speaking on facts. Stated that we've never spent money before. Conyngham, how much money has been spent on Conyngham Beach by the ratepayers? Doing work over there, drop of a hat and council runs. Council's been aware of this erosion for 2 years or more, I'm aware of. If those logs had not have gone in, and let me say this categorically, if those logs had not, on the initiative of those yacht club, if that had not gone in, I would say the shed would have been gone. Don't tell me that the logs did nothing. They have done absolutely what they were put there for. And as far as undermining underneath the log is absolutely rubbish. There is no underpinning. In fact, if they were left alone and completed the project with the logs, there wouldn't be a problem because the logs would solve the problem. We did exactly down at Silverwood Park at Woodbridge with the erosion down there. The only reason that failed with logs was the fact that it had gaps, big gaps, and the water got in between the gaps. I support the recommendation because I've been part of the discussions all the way through. I was there the day the minister came down and looked at that site. The boat club do a fantastic job and bring a lot of tourists into that area through their activities. And as far as that big parcel of dump, whatever it was called, that was put there illegally, I can assure you it wasn't, and that is a significant interest to anyone. That is the last piece of the old floating bridge in Hobart. That is it, the last piece. And I can assure you the number of tourists that go there and realise that, and it should be a photo down there, council should be promoting it as a tourist thing. But anyway, I'll support the motion, I've moved it, and I believe they deserve anything they get. I don't know the answer as far as what we use is up to our engineers, it's up to our consultant and our own engineer here, Mr Reeves, when the time comes, when the money is available to do this work.
Okay, so the motion was moved by Councillor Grace and seconded by Councillor Mitchell, and it's that the organisers of the petition titled Save Bruny Island Boat Club be advised that Council will provide in-kind assistance through the project management and technical advice in relation to the recommendations contained within the report on the erosion of the Ilona foreshore prepared by Burberry Consulting, but will not undertake or fund required remediation works, and B, a lease agreement be prepared to formalise the tenure of the club rooms that provides clarity with respect to the future responsibilities of the boat club and council. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against?
Aye.
We'll have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillors Grace, Street, Reet, Westwood, Cordova and Winter, Midgley and Winter. Actually, it is. And all those against is Councillors Fox and Wass. The motion is carried. Would we like to have a break? We do have quite a bit to go, yeah. So we're going to have a break until... Do we want 10 or 15?
Yeah.
10. So we'll make it 7. 7. One, two, three, four, five. We need one more.
Thank you. There we go.
There we go, and we're back.
Right.
Okay, it's now 7:47, so we'll restart the meeting. And the next item on the agenda is Kingborough Wastes. Is O'Brien's Road Maintenance. Councillor Grace, would you like to move this item? Looking for a seconder on the item. Councillor Reet, Councillor Grace.
I don't need to add anything, Mayor. It's something we were expecting.
Yep. Councillor Grace, you've the microphone tonight. You've missed it a couple of times.
No, I don't need to say any more. It's something that we knew that was going to come before us.
Yeah.
I'm just so pleased it's all completed. Now I can rest and find another one.
Oh, gosh. Okay, are there any further contributions on this matter? The recommendations on... 118. You happy, Councillor Fox?
Yep.
Okay, the motion is moved by Councillor Grace and seconded by Councillor Reet. Is the Council resolved to take over maintenance of O'Brien's Road from change 492 metres to change 110 metres as measured from Snug Falls Road, and that the takeover be gazetted and the municipal map be updated accordingly? All those in favour, please say aye. Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. The next item is the Kingborough Waste Services Director Appointment and Remuneration. So I recommend a motion on page 121. Councillor Reet. Councillor, moved by Councillor Reet, seconded by Councillor Midgley. Okay. I disagree completely, and I still have major issues with KWS. I don't understand why we need them, never have. I haven't been convinced of the requirement for or the what expertise the chairman or the directors are providing that we couldn't provide through consultants or elsewhere. The governance structure is unusual to say the least, and so for all those reasons I continue to, whilst appreciating, by the way, particularly our new management there, they are doing a really, really good job. I couldn't to agree to support this. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you. I just had a couple of questions about how we arrived at the figures 10,000 and 8,000. So we're estimating the increase in work to be in the order of 40% based on an increase from 6 meetings to 9. So how does the increase from 7,500 to 10,000 and 5,500 to 8,000, how is that calculated?
Mr. Ferrier?
Through the chair, as the report indicates, the board is now responsible for a lot more functions than it was when the board was established. That's back in 2011, and those original fees for the chairperson and the other director were set at $7,500 and $5,500. So in terms of just the time spent, it's probably a 40%, almost a 40% increase in terms of the time that the board members are spending on in the tasks that they have to perform as board members, as well as that the actual responsibilities that that KWS is now undertaking are much, much greater than they originally were. The actual way that the dollars were increased, I guess, is, well, $7,500 has been increased by $2,500, and $5,500 has been increased by $2,500. It's roughly 40% of what they've been paid previously or currently. It's probably just a little bit under, in fact. So it's rounded off to the nearest $500. We weren't trying to be too accurate in all of this because it's fairly subjective. So it was just felt that 10,000 and 8,000 were an appropriate remuneration for the time that they spent.
Thank you. And in terms of, for example, the audit panel, which is next on our agenda, can I ask how much the chairperson is paid of the audit panel? Is that appropriate? Mm.
Top of your head sort of stuff.
Three, Mr. Mayor, off the top of my head. It is in the vicinity of $3,000.
And how many times does the audit panel meet per year?
Four. Three, Mr. Mayor, four times.
So four times a year for $3,000. So we're saying nine times a year for $10,000. And are there any other comparable committees that pay a chairperson? Pay a chairperson?
Yeah, I don't think so. Mr. Ferrier?
No, I don't think. I think they're the two that we actually pay. I mean, this chairperson is also the chair of a company, so it does have additional responsibilities. Plus, there is a lot more. I'm not saying that there's more reading, because obviously the audit panel has a lot of off reading away from meetings as well. But we also conduct workshops and other sessions as well. But this does have the responsibilities of being the chair of a company.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, through you, Mayor. Having heard what you just said and your contribution, I think...
Sorry, I've been saying it for years. No one's, everyone stopped listening. You've just heard it for the first time, but it's much longer and better usually.
Okay. I thought it was a bit lackluster. But I guess that my question would be that... Well, I guess it's just my consideration is around the fact that the remuneration hasn't been increased for 8 or 9 years. And the question would be, have we seen any diminution in the amount of service provision or any kind of reason that it drastically needs to be increased? I guess that's an open-ended question. I'm not even sure that it
requires a response.
Through the chair, when KWS was established in 2011, it was responsible for the Beretta Waste Transfer Station only. Since that time, it's then assumed responsibility for the Bruni Waste Transfer Station, and more recently, in a couple of years ago, it has been handed the responsibilities of all of council's waste management responsibilities. So, in other words, it's managing the contracts, the curbside collection contracts. It's investigating the green waste collection contracts. It's looking at a whole range of policy issues, the negotiations with the disposal of recyclables. It's engaged in all of the functions that council is involved in relation to waste management, when previously it was only involved in the operations of the Bretta Waste Transfer Station. So the increase in responsibilities are probably threefold.
Thank you. I guess to finish off my contribution, it's... Yeah, it's not to compare like with like, but there's so many other things that council should be directing its money towards rather than an increase in payments for independent board directors as important. I'm still considering my position, but well spoken, Mayor.
Thank you. A passion project of mine, Council Street.
You throw the bait out, Mayor. And, yeah, it's like you wanted me to grab a hold of it. Look, I'm going to vote for this because, I mean, we have the system that we have and we need to remunerate the directors and the chairperson. Look, I accept that we have given Kingborough Waste Services further responsibility in the areas of education and policy, but they've done that at our direction, not at the director's direction. I suspect the directors have given probably quite little consideration to it, if at all. They've done it on council's direction, all of those things. So I think suggesting that we're potentially given the board a greater workload as a result of those things is probably stretching it. I also flag, I do wonder in these circumstances if something went wrong with KWS, how ASIC would look at council. And whether they might see council as a shadow director in and of itself. I don't know whether that's something that's ever been considered, but, I mean, essentially, Kingborough Waste Services act at our direction, which is a concern. Like I say, I'm going to vote for it because we need directors and we need a chairperson, we need to remunerate them, accept that. But at some point in time, we are going to have to grapple with this, especially given that we've now given them more responsibilities. We let the staff of KWS sit around the council chamber and answer questions as if they're staff when they're not. At some point in time, we are going to need to grapple again with the question of what their position within the structure of council is. Because I don't think we've got it right just yet. And while I don't go as far as the Mayor, it is worthy of consideration.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just in regards to what yourself and Councillor Street has said, have we had a review of the governance structure?
I put a notice of motion to Council in 2015 calling for a review into the governance structure of KWS, and it lost 5-5 since then, unless I'm unaware it hasn't. Okay, Councillor Reid, did you want to sum up? Okay, the motion is that Council A endorses the intention to seek applications for the position of independent non-executive director chairperson of the board of Kingborough Waste Services Proprietary Limited, and B approves the annual remuneration for the chairperson to be $10,000 and be $8,000 for the other independent non-executive director. It was moved by Councillor Reid, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against? We'll have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillors Street, Reet, Fox, Midgley and Wass. And those against is Councillors Grace, Westwood, Cordova and Winter. And the motion is carried 5-4. Okay, the next item is Independent Audit Panel Member Recommendations on page 123. Audit panellists, Councillor Street moves, seconded by Councillor Fox. You're on the committee, no, Councillor Fox, you were on the selection committee. Yeah, Councillor Street. Okay, well, I've already done it though, so I can't really, I can't change it, but Councillor Fox can speak first if you like.
Yeah, well, I'll reserve my right and Councillor Fox can speak first because she was actually on the selection committee.
I was... There was also another member of the audit panel, a professional on the audit committee, of course, and we had some strong applicants, but this particular applicant has got extremely good experience in Glenorchy City Council, and she has very good references from both that council and other people who know her, who have been her referees. We did interview another person, and we also had shortlisted another person who we'd previously interviewed, but when we interviewed Colette, she was the outstanding candidate to be chosen. So that's the recommendation from the council's panel, basically. Mr. Breen's not here, but... yeah, I'm happy to answer questions.
Councillor Wass.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to say that I'm very disappointed in this report. This is the first time that I've seen a recommended appointment without having the papers for the other people. And although I would probably go along the way in which the recommendation is couched, I have no idea who the other people are. And as I said, I believe this is the first time that's ever happened, and I think we should be reverting back so that we are well aware of who the candidates are. It's not saying that we would reverse that decision, but I can't support this on that basis. I'd be happy to move that the matter be deferred to the next meeting so that those names and details can be added.
I guess I'd have trouble putting the names of unsuccessful candidates in a public agenda item. If it was enclosed, I think I'd agree with it.
In the past, it's always been enclosed, yes.
So is there, perhaps, Mr. Smead, did you want to speak to why this is in open session? Or anyone? I thought we actually couldn't consider in closed session because we're not able to under the regulations.
Mayor, you'd need a reason to consider it in closed. What's been presented in this report has no justification under the local government meeting procedures to put it in closed, and from the perspective of transparency, we do try and put as many reports as possible into open session.
Councillor Street.
Look, Mayor, in the time available, I'm not able to necessarily refute Councillor Wass's comment, but we did appoint another member of the audit panel during my time on council, and I don't recall receiving the applications for the...
What was the name of the candidate?
John Hills is who we appointed. I don't recall receiving the appointments, apart from as in my position as being a member of the audit panel. But again, I'm not able to prove that in the time that I have. What I can say is this: having seen the applications, and while not being a member of the panel that did the interviews, and I certainly thank Councillor Fox and Paul McTaggart, who is a member of our audit panel, for conducting those interviews, there's no doubt in my mind that Colette was the outstanding candidate. And I have to say that I'm also very pleased that, incidental to that, we're being able to appoint a woman to the audit panel. I think that's very pleasing indeed. So I fully support the motion, obviously, as I moved it. I would ask that councillors do the same.
Oh, no, he didn't speak at the start. He withheld his thing and handballed. Yes, yes. Yes. So, Councillor Fox, you've already made a contribution. Any other comments or questions? No lights are on. Councillor Street, we're just going to call that a sum up. I think we'll call you right, Gary. The motion is that Colette Miller be appointed to the audit panel as an independent member for a period of 4 years. Moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillor Grace Street, Reid. Westwood, Fox, Cordova, Midgley and Winter. And those against is Councillor Wass. The motion is carried. We move on. Next item is the proposed new road names. Page 125, recommended motion.
Also move.
Councillor Fox would like to move that, seconded by Councillor Westwood. Councillor Fox.
I think it's highly appropriate that Quince Place is chosen, because apparently there were quinces growing in this area, and it's quite a unique name. I think it's very nice. Thank you.
Councillor Street.
Councillor Street.
I have to do it, because unfortunately the state government have decided that they're going to abolish the nomenclature board. So it may well be my last opportunity to say that I agree with the motion to submit Quince Place as a name to the nomenclature board, which, as we all know, is my favourite word.
Councillor Fox has moved, and Councillor Cordova. You had something to add on this matter.
Through you, Mayor, I just thought I would put on the public record that whilst it's nice that there's a quince tree there and that it's been there for a long time and it's a nice enough name, I would have really preferred to have seen a name that recognises, a Palabakani word that recognises the people who are here for a very much longer time than that quince tree and for thousands of generations echoing back through time.
I think the policy is that we can't use Ms. Tyler Moore.
Can't use it.
Through you, Mayor, that it's been advised that the Tasmanian Aboriginal groups that are applicable to the area don't accept the naming of man-made objects, so bridges, roads and so forth aren't to be named. There are other states where those particular groups do allow and endorse that.
Fair enough, too. I stand corrected. And I guess on that point, the second half of my contribution was going to say that the land was never ceded, and so, at every opportunity that we have, I think we should recognise that this land was taken at the barrel of a musket, and there is no treaty still, and there should be, and we have a significant ways to go with respect to just being cognizant and respectful of the place that we're living.
Any further contributions? Councillor Fox, would you like to sum up? The motion is moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Westwood. Is the Council resolves that the proposed road named Quince Place be for subdivision DAS 2018-25 at 137 Beach Road, Margate, be approved and submitted to the nomenclature board or whatever. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against? Motion is carried. The next item is information reports on page, recommended motion on page 127 that the Mayor's communications be noted. For a mover and a second, Councillor Fox moves, Councillor Mitchell seconds. Any comments or questions in relation to this? Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I was wondering if you could give us an update on your meeting with ELGAT, where you attended the charitable rates meeting, please.
Myself and Christy Johnson from Glenorchy and Christina Homdale from West Tamar as chair have been appointed as the elected member reps to the steering committee, and that includes Nick Heath from Hobart and General Manager Sanderson from Brighton and Katrina Stevenson. And the steering committee's job is to steer us into getting the position we want, which is to be able to get the IOUs rated again, independent living units, that is. At the moment, the LGAT has been very proactive in trying to talk to both the representatives of the sector, the aged care sector, and also TASCOS, and trying to explain our point of view and the reasons why this is a very important principle for us that's upheld. It hasn't been able to be agreed. Although there weren't poles apart, the timing is becoming an issue where we're over 12 months since the Supreme Court decision, almost at 12 months since the High Court refused to hear the case, and we are getting towards budget season and we don't have any clarity on this. So the group has now... The government has committed to providing us with a response and its position before Christmas, and it still hasn't, which is why the op-ed that I wrote as endorsed by its steering committee was provided to the papers to try and bring this up and encourage them to do something. I understand that Katrina Stevenson and Nick Heath and representative from Timmins Ray, which is the PR firm that's been hired in, have organised a meeting with the local government minister and the treasurer to discuss this.
we're still optimistic that we'll get a good outcome, but we are still a long way away, and we're very conscious, particularly this council, and I think we're the most impacted, by the way, that we really need some clarity on this revenue before we do a budget on the... otherwise, we're going to have to write a budget without the revenue from IOUs, and that is going to be a very, 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 very hard budget if we have to do that, because we know we really deferred a lot of hard decisions for next budget in the last budget. And so if we don't have that revenue, then yeah, it's going to be a tough budget. And it will be, they're always tough, but I think they'll be really tough. So hopefully before Christmas, before Christmas we expect that we will have an answer. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Just asking about Tas Water, if you would like to elaborate on that.
Travelled to Launceston for this meeting, and it's an AGM, but there weren't many positions changed or anything. The owner's representative is still Doug Chipman. The general meeting, I'm pleased to say when the issues get raised, we don't really have... Well, we obviously got a water quality issue, but because we've had our Blackens Bay sewage treatment plant upgraded now, we're really in a very advantageous position where other mayors are there arguing for projects that are much needed, and we're lucky to already have ours done. So nothing particular. The water restrictions wasn't discussed at all. Since then, the first we got official word was last Thursday, and the day they announced it, they just gave us a courtesy call to tell us they were going to communicate it. But the governance structure is basically we're just shareholders. It's essentially the same as a shareholder meeting. We sit there and the directors tell us what they're doing, and we ask questions, and they usually don't pay any attention. Councillor Grace.
Mayor, I nearly forgot. What day is it? 26th of November, you accomplished Her Excellency the Governor to Bruny Island. Yesterday I learnt it was a very fruitful event. Unfortunately, I wasn't... how can I put it without being critical, wasn't accepted as one of the guests, because there wouldn't be enough to eat, I understand, but I never eat much anyway when I go out. But why I'm raising this is the fact, and is the fact that, as you know, whilst I was the chair of the advisory group on the island, thanks to the council and councillors, that we integrated with the Bruny Island District School as part of the committee, and council supported that through those years, that we had good solid influence, I think, on those students, and they carried out some good work. Well, Your Excellency the Governor was so pleased with that school herself that she's invited the whole school to Government House as her guest. Now, I think that is worth noting, and I'm very surprised, Mayor, you didn't mention that.
Oh, it's because I didn't go. I had to leave to go to the other meeting that's listed here, which
down
is
the boat club.
The Legat Charitable Rates Committee meeting. So I had to get off Bruny Island before that part of the itinerary. So unfortunately, I missed that bit.
Did you?
But Councillor Bastone did attend, and she said it was wonderful.
Yes, and I think it's great that she's invited all a school. I guess it's all the school, not just single one class, I don't think.
I'll bus them up there.
So I might be invited to that.
Cross your fingers, Councillor Grace. You behave yourself and anything's possible. Councillor Midgley.
Don't eat much. Thank you, Mayor. Just wondering about the basics program and what support we have provided to that.
Yes. Well, our communications and engagement advisor is hiding because I think she's done quite a lot of work. It was one of those ones where the school really wanted to host an event, but the bureaucracy of the Department of Education meant that it would have taken them, if they got approved at all, to do it. Because the basics is slightly outside of... It's not, you know, not at odds with Department of Education policy, but it's a little bit of a stretch. And so they asked us whether we could officially host it, even though I guess they've got a huge amount to do. So we've organised the posters for Drew Point, and we've organised the guest list quite a bit.
Oh, wow.
your services will be there, food. Even some issues around the catering, because there's the food truck policy prevents food trucks from coming in, but the new cafe isn't actually open. So we've restricted food trucks, even though the cafe's not really operating. So, yes.
Sounds interesting.
So it's all... Sarah's a bit tired.
Thanks, Sarah, for the children, for the early years. Also just had a question in regards to Bruny Island. I wasn't sure. It says Murrayfield and Hibba. Is that the correct pronunciation?
Yeah.
What is...
It's where the fudge chocolate factory is.
Me,
but
it's know.
Actually, yeah, that's... It's their private home, yeah, and it's spectacular.
Oh, I have been there. I didn't know
your
name.
Yeah, it was wonderful, really. It was very nice. Sorry, Councillor Grace. Any other comments before? We've no lights on, so the motion is that the Mayor's communication be noted. Moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, motion is carried. Next item is on page 128, is confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. Looking for a mover and seconder of the motion is printed. Moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Fox. So the motion is that in accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulation 2015, Council by absolute majority move into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence, planning review, tender assessment AB 1908 Kingston Park Playground Construction Kingston, access to public open space at Riverdale Road, blowhole reserve, risk mitigations and general manager's performance review. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, the motion is carried unanimously, and the open session of council is adjourned at 8:16 p.m.